Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today's program has modest goals. We're going to take on United States Mideast policy, insofar as we have one, unlawful occupations, the U.S.-based Israel lobby, craven politicians, including Mrs. Pelosi, and two countries that love to proclaim themselves democracies while committing a catalog of war crimes large enough to make Attila the Hun weep. We'll also squeeze in some good music, so please don't touch that digital keypad. As you've probably heard, the State of Israel is celebrating the 60th anniversary of its founding. By UN mandate, 1948. At the same time, Palestinians and their supporters are commemorating the 60th anniversary of Nakba, or the catastrophe, in which their land was taken in order to create Israel, and a process of ethnic cleansing of them was begun. In, I think it was 1967, Israel took a large amount of additional land that the Palestinians considered theirs in a small war that Israel won handily. 40 years later, the bulk of this additional land, known as the West Bank, remains under Israeli military occupation, and de facto, so do two smaller parcels of land, East Jerusalem and Gaza, or the Gaza Strip. The Afrikaans word apartheid designates the system of white minority rule, oppression of blacks, and segregation formerly in place in the Republic of South Africa. In 2006, former President Jimmy Carter published a book, Palestine, Peace Not Apartheid, that criticized the policies of Israel and advocated better treatment of Palestinians in the occupied territories. Such a perspective is common in Europe, familiar in Israel itself, and almost unheard of in the United States. As journalist Greg Palast likes to say, the United Kingdom has no First Amendment. We should give them ours. After all, we're not using it. Here's what we'll do. We'll begin with about 2 minutes of a talk by Carter in 2006, which gives a good general overview of the Israel-Palestine situation. Then we'll hear a phone interview from 2003 with Anne Gwynne, a 65-year-old Welsh grandmother living in the town of Nablus, Palestine. This gives a great view from ground zero of the occupation. Following a sprightly song by David Rovix, I'll read a powerful open letter on Israel and Palestine from noted sociologist and feminist Kathleen Barry to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. So, fasten your seatbelts, tell your secretary to hold all calls from AIPAC or Professor Dershowitz, and stay tuned. Here's Carter.
I don't consider the word provocative to be a negative description, because it's designed to provoke discussion and analysis and debate in a country where debate and discussion is almost completely absent, if it involves any criticism at all of the policies of Israel. The words of Palestine, peace, not apartheid, were carefully chosen by me. First of all, it's Palestine, the area of Palestinians. It doesn't refer to Israel. I've never and would imply that Israel is guilty of any form of apartheid in their own country. And the next word is peace. For the last 6 years, there's not been one single day of good faith negotiations between Israelis and their neighbors, the Palestinians. And this is absolutely a departure from what has happened under all previous presidents since Israel became a nation. We've all negotiated or attempted to negotiate peace agreements. That has been totally absent now for 6 years. So peace. And in the last two words, not apartheid. The alternative to peace is apartheid, not inside Israel, to repeat myself, but in the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem. the Palestinian territory. And there, apartheid exists in its more despicable forms. The Palestinians are deprived of basic human rights. Their land has been occupied and then confiscated and then colonized by the Israeli settlers. And they have now more than 205 settlements in the West Bank itself. And what has happened is, over a period of years, the Israelis have connected settlements with highways. And those highways make with the West Bank look like a honeycomb and maybe a spider web. You can envision it. And in many cases, most cases, the Palestinians are prevented from using the highways at all, and in many cases, even from crossing the highways.
Okay, here's Anne Gwynn on the ground in Nablus, Palestine, in 2003, speaking by phone to Dennis Bernstein in Berkeley.
You're listening to Flashpoints. The violent occupation of Palestine has continued apace in the last week. There has been the killing of a number of children, the destruction or the prepared destruction of an entire village, 40 houses about to be demolished or already demolished, and the attacks continue. We're now joined by Anne Gwynn. Please, Anne, introduce yourself and tell us what's going on.
My name is Anne Gwynn. I'm from Wales. I'm a 65-year-old grandmother. I'm here in Nablus, which is in the north of Palestine, a city under siege. Actually today, day 292. The city has been under constant curfew every single day for 292 days. It has been under total curfew 24 hours a day for three solid months when no one was allowed out without being running risk of being shot. We're expecting an attack today because all surrounding cities, Tulkarem, Jenin, Balata refugee camp, Askara refugee camp, they've all been attacked in the last 3 to 4 days. People have been killed every time. People have been arrested without any charge, without any proof, without any destination stated, just simply taken away, 15 at a time from all these places in handcuffs. We in Nablus have expected this attack for the last 4 days. It didn't come, but tonight I was sitting writing an email, sending him the document about today's diary, when I heard tanks everywhere. I rushed out down the leafy little one-way street to the right of this ambulance center to see, never before in my life, four enormous tanks in a column going across the bottom of the road, accompanied by an enormous bulldozer, I mean bigger than the tanks, and several jeeps. I came back to write to you about this, and just as I had just got about two paragraphs, my God, I heard them coming down the side street, more of them, another four, right past here, not more than 10 feet to the hedge from the window, actually there, I couldn't believe it. So they have gone into the residential area, I don't know where, because we are on the outskirts of Nablus. Eight tanks in the city center of a 3,000-year-old city are not here to look at the shops. They are really here to either demolish many houses, because eight tanks is a lot. One tank does a good job of demolition. Or, I don't know what they're here for. I really don't know what they're here for.
And why are you there, a 65-year-old grandmother? What are you doing
65,
there?
65, yeah. I came here on my own because I met Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in London, and I was very impressed with him. And I just have been very worried about Palestine, of course, as we all are, for a number of years, but couldn't quite make the jump, and I just came. It's a life-changing experience for anyone who cares to come. We need every international we can get. They protect the ambulances. They protect the people whom the secret police pick up. I've been with the secret police for 5 hours this morning with a shin bait.
And what were you doing there at the secret, at the offices of the secret police?
Protecting a young Palestinian called Hussein Khalili. He's 29. He's married to an American woman who has been deported to Switzerland by the Israelis from Palestine, not allowed to stay with her Palestinian husband. So this morning we were at the Huwara checkpoint. Afra, weeping, got into one taxi to take her to Tel Aviv. And I and Hussein got into the other one to take us to the Shin Bet headquarters between the Huwara and Awarta checkpoints. We thought that if I went, I look a bit sort of grandmotherly. It did work. After 5 hours, he was freed, and we floated on cloud nine all the way back to the ambulance center.
Well, Anne Gwynn, we want to thank you very much. You've been calling us on a daily basis trying to tell us what's going on. We're hearing reports of demolition, one demolition of an entire town. We're hearing about the closing of universities. We're hearing about now many children, so many children being killed that there's now a children's cemetery. It must be something to see this firsthand.
One of the things I have been really, really privileged to do here is to be able to go out in the ambulances. It's a rare privilege. I'm the only international who is in the ambulances, and I do it most of every day, and I do it often at night. Tonight I am here to go all night. The fact that I'm an international offers some protection to the drivers. They are unlikely to shoot a driver if there is an international in the cab. They have actually killed 20 ambulance drivers here in Nablus, and 85 ambulances have been totally destroyed. The things that happen here are things that happen in war, not in a situation where you have a city of 186,000 people who are being regularly attacked by huge, I wish I knew the name, huge tanks, F-16s, the usual war things, huge bullets from high-velocity rifles, which actually blow a child's head off. One of the other ambulance drivers, Piraz, he said to me the other day, he said, you know, I picked up a child, 18 months old, who had been shot straight into his face, and there was nothing left. Not a mistake. And he said, you know why he was shot? Because they thought he was a terrorist, but people should have to think this in 2003.
And they open fire because the kids are throwing rocks?
Yes, and I always thought that maybe, until I came here, they were big. But I tried it. They are palm-sized because they cannot get within 100 yards of usually of a tank or anybody. So when they throw, it has to go a long way because to throw anything heavy that far, you can't. They really are palm-sized stones. And many times after a child, and it were some young people, one guy was killed and seven were very, very seriously injured 4 or 5 nights ago. I went to look at the stones in the ambulance. We were after we'd taken them all to hospital. And really, they were stones, small. There was nothing that, you know, could have hurt a soldier in a steel helmet.
And do they open up with heavy weaponry?
Yes, they were very, very large shoot-to-kill bullets. The young man who was killed had a bullet, a huge bullet, straight through the heart, so one, so it wasn't accidental that he was killed. The young man who is fighting for his life now, he's 16, he had an enormous bullet in the groin, which completely cut a big chunk out of his vein that goes down from the abdomen into the leg, and he had really, really such severe blood loss. Another young man is also fighting for his life. He got an enormous bullet, which shattered the bones of his upper arm and lodged in his lung and again caused huge, huge, huge blood loss. Because, of course, when the ambulance gets to the checkpoint, this is normal here. I nearly didn't tell you. You can be waiting for, well, we have waited 5 hours. We've delivered babies at the checkpoints. And Dr. Hassan, he is actually the director of this particular center. His wife, actually, was telling me yesterday, she's a gynecologist who waited 5 hours at a checkpoint and then was turned back yesterday with a mobile clinic. She said that Hassan recently went out on the Jerusalem Road to pick up a child who had been killed, and the brain had been blown out of the child's head. There was no face, and it lay on the roadside, and somehow it hadn't been damaged, and he just picked it up in his two hands, put it on the stretcher, and now he dreams about it. And all the ambulance drivers here are in a really desperate state. I mean, they don't sleep. They have horrendous nightmares when they do sleep. The pictures, of course, are in their head all the time. It's very difficult. Everyone in this city who has been, and they've all been through a lot, say this is the worst it's ever been. We cannot move. Every city on the West Bank, not just Nablus, is closed. I was at the biggest checkpoint today, and he said, no one allowed through, only passport holder, no one else, whether you're going to visit baby, nothing, no one.
ask me how it is that I dare to take a side. You say I loathe myself pointing out you have lied. You say it's tribal warfare, but I disagree, for the dynamics of the situation are not difficult to see. On the one side is the fighter jet, on the other is the stone. On the one side is the slave, on the other is the throne. For the many there are checkpoints, while foreign soldiers rule the streets. For the one side there is victory, but the people don't accept defeat. The word you need to know is occupation. The very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the tanks return to Tel Aviv. On the one side there is hunger and bulldozed olive trees. On the other is the army ruling by decrees. Caterpillars maul the streets, destroy whole city blocks, while children swallow shrapnel for the crime of throwing rocks. Fences are erected around the towns they flatten, and Herzl's own fanatics sleep on sheets of satin. And they water their plantations, drilling ever deeper wells, while the displaced children of the hopeless are filled with bullet shells. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the settlers return to Tel Aviv. On the one side there's the Mossad, rounding up the men, thrown in jail with no trial, being tortured once again. On the other there is rage, helplessness and fear, and a growing realization that another Holocaust is near. On the outside there are prisons, the inside detainees, being stripped of their humanity, beaten naked to their knees. Outside the ghetto walls, stormtroopers all around, while inside the hungry people yearn for liberated ground. The word you need to know is occupation, the very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It'll come on the day the jail guards return to Tel Aviv. All across the world you can hear the people say, children of Jerusalem will be free one day. In overcrowded camps amidst the stench of death and flies, to the suburbs of Detroit you can hear the anguish cries. While in the land of Israel, with God ever on their side, walls and fences are constructed, papers are denied. People fight for their existence while we turn a blinded eye, and those who should know better insist on asking why. The words you need to know is occupation, very definition of a land without a nation. And if peace is what you're after, then let us not deceive. It will come on the day the refugees return to Tel Aviv.
David Rovics, who sounds pretty good when he lets himself rock a little bit. That was Occupation from his album Return. Now we have an interesting piece I found published in Counterpunch online, May 24 to 25, 2008, by Kathleen Barry, PhD. She is a feminist, a sociologist, and professor emerita at Penn State University. She is now completing her fourth book, Expendable Lives, a new book on masculinity and war. Her piece is titled Celebrating Ethnic Cleansing, an open letter to Nancy Pelosi on Israel. Nancy Pelosi, of course, is the new Speaker of the House of Representatives, perhaps the most powerful person in Congress, certainly the most powerful woman in Congress. Dear Nancy Pelosi, check your history books. Celebrating the 60th anniversary of the State of Israel is celebrating the Zionist ethnic cleansing of Arabs from Palestine. It is celebrating the expulsion of 750,000 Arabs, who generations later still people the refugee camps of Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, who still mourn their families slaughtered by the Zionists as they completely destroyed Arab villages in Palestine, who still hold keys to their homes that were seized by the new Israeli state in 1948. I stand with Jews, with Palestinians, with every people who seek protection from persecution, but never with those who persecute others, who conduct well-documented ethnic cleansing to gain their own protection, which in 6 decades of Israeli wars has been no protection at all for Israelis. I expected George Bush to align himself with the warmongering far right-wing government of Israel. After all, he provided most of the millions of laser-guided smart bombs Israel directed at apartment buildings and cluster bombs that still take the lives in the south of Lebanon. Israel's crimes against humanity in the 2006 Israeli war against Lebanon go unnoticed by you and your delegation, as you are only concerned with Hezbollah's threat to Israel, its kidnapping of 3 soldiers. In that war, the Israeli Air Force launched more than 7,000 air attacks on about 7,000 targets in Lebanon between 12 July and 14 August, while the Navy conducted an additional 2,500 bombardments. Does that sound at all proportional to the kidnapping of 3 Israeli soldiers? Neither is justified, but reason is required. Your personal convictions override reason, making you very dangerous in a position of leadership. Are those the Israeli tags of kidnapped soldiers you carry from that war? Do you wonder at all about the families of the 1,200 dead Lebanese while you worry for those soldiers? Check the details, Nancy. Israel's aggression of Lebanon's borders has outnumbered Hezbollah's. Bathing in self-congratulations on Israel's 60th anniversary without any acknowledgement of the Nakba, the disaster wrought upon the Palestinians by Zionists in what was then Palestine, you have told me and all Americans clearly that as Speaker of the House, you are not representing Americans. You are representing the current Israeli government, without ever questioning, in fact, implicitly condoning, their crimes against humanity. For a long time, many of us have been discouraged by the number of senators and representatives who have been bought by the Israeli lobby in the U.S. Your press conference of May 20, celebrating Israel's ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, proved how wrong we have been. Your personal allegiance to Israel outstrips reason and aligns with George Bush's Christian fundamentalist alliance with Israel. Americans must seriously question your fitness to represent us, all of us, in Congress. Having fought for women's rights over 3 decades, I was proud to see you assume the highest congressional office in the United States. Having opposed the war in Iraq, and now writing on war and masculinity, I was relieved to see you and the Democrats retake control of the Congress in 2007. But watching you in your press conference tonight celebrate your return from Israel's celebrations, I see that even though the U.S. Congress was manipulated by George Bush in 2003 to support a war that should not have been fought, you stand with him today on the brink of another war. Your collusion with George Bush's war on terrorism may well be the biggest threat to peace in the Middle East. It has been nearly 8 years since George Bush's violent disregard for human life, especially human life in the Arab world, made me ashamed to be an American. Listening to you, following your speech to the Knesset, I am deeply saddened that you have only reinforced that shame. I long for the America who will not justify the persecution of any people, who will protect and defend the human rights of all human beings. I no longer imagine you as part of that possibility. With regards, Kathleen Barry, Ph.D. And Kenneth Doust, Ph.D. says, Amen. Remember, you heard it here first. Well, thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced in the studios of WWUH-FM, which station is a community service of the University of Hartford. For the brief Carter clip, our thanks to democracynow.org, and our thanks to Dennis Bernstein and Flashpoints for the phone conversation from what must be one of the cooler grandmothers in Wales. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the presenter, the station management, staff, or the licensee, and their expression is protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Your comments and suggestions are most welcome. Write to Kenneth Doust, New World Notes, WWUH-FM, University of Hartford, 200 Bloomfield Avenue, West Hartford, Connecticut, 06117, or email me at kdoust, that's K-D-O-W-S-T, at hotmail.com. Until next time, from the spacious underground studios of WWUH, here's wishing you a good week. Illa get to my non-carborundum. Try to speak the truth and keep the faith.
It was another Friday morning. I was among the olive trees, out looking for birds to catch. My father, his friends, and me. I had my stringing net and a nimble eye there beside the farmer's fields where the songbirds fly. When you're catching birds, the world disappears, and a thousand songs of autumn are all that fills your ears. They sing their songs so brightly at the dawning of the day. They fly back and forth over the fence where we must stay away. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind and the songbird sings. It's so good to come here, so far from all the sound of all the shooting and the shouting and the tanks upon the ground. I just wish I could live here amidst this olive grove, just me, my friends and family, and a small wood burning stove. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind and the songbird sings. Last week I caught three sparrows, it was quite a day. Now I'm bound for glory, that's what they say. I hear them talk about me, shedding tears upon a sack. Inside there lies a child with four bullets in his back. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind and the songbird sings. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind and the songbird sings.